Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Monday, the 26th of April, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. And this is episode 34 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week, we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to finally conclude our three-week analysis of astrology by examining some of the psychological factors that cause people to believe in it, despite the fact that it has no correlation with reality. We'll also have a live chat here in the studio with Reality Check's other host and former astrologer herself, Sonia Suter. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at two new but very different movies. Mother, set in modern-day South Korea, and The Last Station, set in early 20th century Russia. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Okay, here's our LGBT news roundup for the last week or so. And first up, let's touch base, as we've been doing for several weeks now, with Argentina, where the fight for marriage equality has now become more complicated than the most overwrought Latin American telenovela. Surprisingly, though, things have been pretty quiet over there this last week, but this coming week, the situation is preparing to heat up once again. Because this Wednesday, April 28th, the lower house of the Argentinian Congress will finally debate the marriage equality bill. And so LGBT rights groups are frantically mobilizing to lobby members of Congress to get them to pass the bill. I hope they'll be successful. Of course, it comes as no surprise to learn that the Catholic bishops of Argentina have also been lobbying the Congress to get it to deny equality to LGBT people. They just can't seem to resist trying to use the state to impose their own personal beliefs on the whole population, can they? Anyway, however it turns out, have no doubt, dear listener, that we will let you know all the gory details on next week's episode of Reality Check. Now, from Argentina, let's head now to the opposite side of the planet, to Mumbai in India, where the four-day Mumbai International Queer Film Festival, known as Kashish, just wrapped up yesterday, Sunday, April 25th. This was the largest and most high-profile LGBT film festival ever held in India, featuring 110 films from 25 countries, and can be seen as yet another sign of the gradually changing attitude to LGBT issues in India and the increasing visibility of LGBT people there. Another positive sign is that India's Information and Broadcasting Ministry, the body in charge of censorship, gave its approval for the festival and allowed all the films to screen uncensored, a first for an event of this kind. The festival wrapped up last night with a screening of Dono Why Na Jaane Kyun, the first ever mainstream Bollywood movie to deal openly and positively with a relationship between two men, and to feature a full-on male-to-male kiss. The film is due to have a general release in India sometime in May, and everyone is waiting to see how it will be received. Hopefully it won't cause riots like the release of Fire did back in 1998. Once again, whatever happens, dear listener, we will of course let you know all the details here on Reality Check. And we'll also try to review the movie if and when it gets released in Australia. And finally, from India, let's head now to another part of the world entirely, to Fiji, in the middle of the South Pacific, where the head of Tourism Fiji, Patrick Wong, announced last week that gay tourists are now very welcome in the island nation. It seems that Fiji is now trying to position itself as a destination in the LGBT tourism market, which is quite a turnaround from just 5 years ago, 2005, when Australian tourist Thomas McCosker was sentenced to 2 years jail for the crime of sodomy after engaging in consensual sex with a Fijian man. Which was itself quite surprising, given that in 1997, Fiji became the second country in the world to explicitly protect against discrimination based on sexual orientation in its constitution. Luckily, that constitution was eventually put into effect and Thomas McCosker's sodomy conviction was overturned by the Fiji High Court in August 2005. Despite that case, though, the sodomy law was still on the books in the Fijian Penal Code until finally on February 1st this year, just a few weeks ago, that penal code was abolished and replaced by a new crime decree, without a sodomy law, thankfully. So Fiji has now completely decriminalised sodomy and is now open for business for LGBT tourism. All very good news, I must say. The only bad news is that the human rights situation more generally in Fiji is not looking very good at all these days. Fiji's noble constitution was, unfortunately, completely abrogated, completely abolished last year when the military took over all arms of government. So there is now no democracy at all in Fiji, and the army rules with complete impunity. So, although the country is now supposedly gay-friendly, maybe now is not the best time to plan a holiday in Fiji and spend money that could support that nasty military regime. And by the way, dear listener, just in case you're interested, the other countries that ban discrimination based on sexual orientation in their constitutions are South Africa, which was the first, Ecuador, Portugal and Bolivia. Okay, that's all the LGBT news we have time for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we return, we'll continue our analysis for the third week running now of astrology. Did you read your horoscope in the newspaper this week? Did it seem surprisingly relevant to your circumstances? But if astrology is pure poppycock, as we saw last week, how could that be? How could it appear to work? Well, to find out, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Made in Melbourne for the world. Joy 94.9.
All day. All day. All night. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Gobbledygook by Icelandic group Sigur Rós, released in 2008. And I played that song in honour of the great Icelandic volcano Eyjafjallajökull, which has been erupting in such a spectacular and disruptive way over the last couple of weeks. And by the way, do check out the video to that song, Gobbledygook, if you can, because it features full frontal male and female nudity throughout the whole video, something of which Reality Check approves wholeheartedly. Now, we're going to get into our astrology chat in a moment, but Sonia Suter, who's going to be joining us in a minute, is already in the studio, and she just had a comment to make about Fiji, which we were talking about here before the break. Sonia.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening and welcome back to Reality
Check. Thank you.
Jack.
This time you're in charge of your own show, and that's probably a good thing. Excellent. Yes, so that Fijian situation, I do wonder if it's been pushed along towards a positive outcome. That seems to be what is happening now. Thankfully, the government are taking it seriously,
mm-hmm.
Due to the fact that there was a documentary made back in released in 2008 by a woman director, Anna Goldson, an award-winning feature documentary called An Island Calling, which played last year at the Melbourne Queer Film Festival and has screened in New Zealand. And it's based on the terrible murders of Fiji Red Cross director John Scott and his partner at the time, Greg Scrivener. Both were murdered and both were gay men in a relationship, obviously. They were murdered in Fiji by a young Fijian man, which was very unfortunate. In the Name of God, apparently. And that was an award-winning documentary that came out a few years ago now.
Yeah, I think if I remember rightly, it did screen on SBS a couple of months ago.
Oh, it did. So, oh, excellent.
But something, yeah, for anyone interested in the situation in Fiji, something definitely worth checking out. What's the name again?
An Island Calling. It's a New Zealand doco. And, yeah, they were both New Zealanders as far as I'm aware.
Right.
It was devastating to their families back home, and they had to put quite a bit of pressure on the Fijian government to take the matter seriously,
right,
because
yeah,
it wasn't actually
action.
Happening. The mm-hmm. media were putting blacklists out on it in Fiji and not reporting the incident clearly and thoroughly, and it took some New Zealand investigative journalists and this woman, director Anna Goldson,
mm-hmm.
to take up the cause and find out what was behind it all. And a lot of it was behind, unfortunately, the influence of religion upon the young man that committed the terrible crime.
Right, as we have seen again and again, unfortunately. Mm. All right, thank you, Sonia. So you'll be coming back in a few minutes. I'll just talk here a little while about our main topic for tonight, which is the psychology of belief in subjects like astrology. So that means we are now moving into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And, as I said, tonight we're going to continue that examination that we began a couple of weeks ago of astrology. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we looked at the basic principles of astrology and examined them to see if they have any validity whatsoever. We concluded that they don't. But if you missed those episodes and would like to hear what we talked about, you can download the podcast versions from the Reality Check website. That's realitycheckonline.net. Now, tonight we're going to look a little bit at the psychology of people who believe in astrology and try to understand some of the processes going on in their minds. And Sonia is going to talk to us in a few moments about her past dabblings in astrology. But first, let's look at that psychology question. If astrology is a load of baloney, how is it that it's still so popular around the world and so many people believe in it? What is going on in people's minds that causes them to think that astrology is a real determining factor in their lives? So here we enter into the realm of cognitive biases. These are ways in which human beings arrive at incorrect conclusions based on certain faulty thought processes rather than based on the evidence. Now, there are many types of cognitive biases, but perhaps the one of most interest to us today is the one known as confirmation bias. This is the tendency to interpret information in a way that confirms your already existing preconceptions, and to ignore or undervalue evidence that contradicts those beliefs. So what are we talking about here? Well, let me give you an example. If you have a preconceived idea that redheads are bad drivers, then you'll tend to notice and remember examples of when you saw redheads driving badly. While on the other hand, forgetting and downplaying all those times when the person you saw driving badly was not a redhead. If your friend then tells you that someone crashed into them recently, you'll ask, was it a redhead? And if they say yes, you'll say, I knew it. See, I just knew it. Redheads are terrible drivers. They're always causing accidents. They should have their licenses taken away from them. If, on the other hand, your friend says, no, it wasn't a redhead, your response will be something like, really? Well, that surprises me. It's normally the redheads that cause all the accidents. And, of course, if you were to actually examine the evidence objectively, see the statistics of accidents caused by redheads compared to accidents caused by people of other coloured hair, you would surely see that redheads are no more or less likely to cause traffic accidents than any other hair color. It's your confirmation bias that causes you to perceive the situation differently from what it really is, and causes you to continue believing something that is not true. So, what's all this got to do with astrology? Well, it's like we saw back in episode 14 of Reality Check when we looked at psychics and their technique of cold reading. Confirmation bias tends to cause people to remember the hits and forget the misses. The same applies to astrology. A woman, for example, who reads her weekly horoscope will ignore the parts in it that don't seem relevant to her, but remember the parts that do. If the horoscope mentions matters related to travel, finance, and romance, for example, and the woman happens to be planning a trip, she'll remember what the horoscope said about travel and forget what it said about finance and romance. And she'll be impressed at how accurate her horoscope was. Of course, if she's an Aquarius, she read her horoscope knowing that it applied especially to Aquarius. But what she didn't do was cut out all the horoscopes, all 12 star signs, and then place them in random order without reference to the star sign they were supposed to apply to. Because if she had done that and then read them all, she'd most likely find that almost all of them have something that could be relevant to her life. And probably none of them seems particularly more relevant than the others. Thus, it was her confirmation bias that caused her to focus on the hits in her horoscope and to continue believing that astrology was a powerful and accurate predictor of events in her life. It made it seem to her that the predictions made by the astrologer were more accurate than they actually really were. If she could eliminate her bias and evaluate the evidence more objectively, she might then have a different understanding of astrology. Now, there's another interesting effect at play here that needs to be mentioned, and that also helps explain the continuing popularity of the newspaper horoscope. It's called the Fora effect, or Barnum effect. And this is the tendency by people to give high accuracy ratings to descriptions of their personality that are supposedly tailored specifically for them, but are in fact vague and general enough to apply to a wide range of people. Now, once again, we talked about this when we looked at psychics, but it's highly relevant to astrology as well. The astrologers who write their weekly columns use a lot of what are called Barnum statements. These are statements that, in reality, are very general and would apply to most people. But when given to one person or a small group, as if crafted specifically for them, they can appear surprisingly accurate and specific. This effect, the Fora effect, was first described by the American psychologist Bertram Fora in the 1940s. He gave what was supposedly a unique personality analysis to each of his students and asked them to rate how accurate they felt it was. It contained statements like, "You have a great deal of unused capacity which you have not turned to your advantage." Or, "At times you have serious doubts as to whether you have made the right decision or done the right thing." Or, "Some of your aspirations tend to be pretty unrealistic." And what do you know? His students gave these personality descriptions a very high accuracy rating, with an average score of 4.26 out of 5. Of course, only after they had all handed in their evaluations did the professor reveal that he had given them all exactly the same personality description. The professor got the results he did because he used Barnum statements, very general descriptions that, when given in the right context, can seem like deep personal insights specific to the individual. Now, pretty much all horoscope writers use these types of statements, and that explains how horoscopes can appear accurate to almost all readers, no matter which star sign they're reading. And as I mentioned, the context here is important. If people believe that their horoscope was tailored specifically to their star sign, and they believe also that it was written by a person with training and authority, the Fora effect will come into play, and generally they will believe that the horoscope is much more accurate than it really is. And finally, one last point to mention about Barnum statements and the Fora effect. Readers perceive statements to be more accurate if they say mostly positive things about them. I mean, no one wants to read something grim and nasty about themselves. And of course, horoscope writers know this almost instinctively and compose their weekly horoscopes accordingly, full of optimistic and positive sounding phrases. And speaking of horoscope writers, we are joined live now in the studio by a former horoscope writer and, of course, Reality Check's other official presenter, Sonia Suter. So once again, a second welcome to Reality Check, Sonia.
Hello.
Hello again.
That's so nice, the way you said that. Yeah, a horror of the horoscopes. Isn't that what you said I was?
Not exactly.
Trust me, it would be correct, accurate.
So, Sonia, well, I'm sure Reality Check listeners are very interested in this aspect of your past. Do tell. So you got interested in astrology and you studied it and learnt about it. So tell us the story.
Once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away.
No. Called New Zealand?
Yes, it almost is another galaxy or another planet at times. But seriously, I got involved in it because a friend about 11 or 12 years ago actually said, "Why don't you do this astrology column? I don't want to do it anymore." And she was a professional in the area and very serious about it. And she said, "You should give it a go because you are, you know," she would say, "you've got that intuitiveness about you."
Oh, the intuition.
Yes.
Exactly.
And being a female, probably, you know, it's always there, isn't it?
And
so I said, yes.
And this was a column in a newspaper or
it was in a magazine in New Zealand. And
right.
The editor, I was introduced to her and we got along and I did her star sign for the week and she said, "Wow, that's amazing. That's so me. You've got the job." So right. I got the job. It was fascinating. And mind you, at the same time, I was doing card reading, and this was in between my screen and numerology workshops, between the chiromonogamy testing I was doing and my homeopathic classes. It was just also before I started doing a Bach Flowers course. So it was around about 1997.
So you were fairly deeply immersed in that
deeply,
world.
Deeply, intensely.
Right. Okay. And had you studied astrology, the principles, and you knew how
Yes, I did a couple of courses, but right. mainly through friends and being taught by fellow mm-hmm. astrologers and people who were really interested in it mm-hmm, and took mm-hmm. it very seriously. One friend at the time, he was very much into it to the point where he would not actually perform anything, any activity for his day until he had done his actual where his stars and alignments and where the sun was and his various planets were for the following day. Oh. And around that, he would actually construct his week and
really?
Following days.
Okay, so he would do his own astrological calculations
with this ephemeris,
and then
yes,
plan each day.
And plan each day. So I just did the same, but for, you know, the 12 sun signs, 12 okay. Western sun signs. So.
Now, Sonia, actually, maybe you just mentioned a word there which we should talk briefly about, and that is ephemeris. What is an ephemeris? I know that they are used by astrologers.
Yes, well, it is hard to describe it, but it is actually... there are two types. Firstly, there's an astronomical ephemeris, mm-hmm. which they use in astronomy, and it's used in science. So that's the
that's
legitimate
the real
one.
Okay.
The astrological ephemeris is very different, and most astrologers who are legitimate, so-called, do use it, where it's basically about the Earth's orbit and the position of the Earth to the position of the Sun and its orbit around the Sun. And so it's based on the spring or vernal equinox position of the sun and where, you know, you are located at that time of the year.
But basically it's a sheet. It looks like a map.
Oh,
like,
yes. Yeah, sorry, I should explain. It looks like a very complex looking map.
Right.
I mean, I can show you what it looks like, Tony, and you're going to go, what the?
Oh,
so it
right.
has the longitude and latitude, and every year going back to, I believe, 1900 is the most recent Western one.
It looks like a table of very complicated statistics.
Lots of numbers, lots right. of equations. So it starts with the day, the sidereal time, which is the Western astrology that mm-hmm. we use. Mm-hmm. Then it has the sun point, and then where the moon is. And from there, it then has your rising sign and the other 11 signs that... in order of the planets, where the planets are.
Right. So
although Pluto's still included in there, which is interesting considering
even
it's...
even though he's been demoted.
Yeah,
right.
It's just an old rock.
Right.
Old ice rock.
So basically this is a way for astrologers to do their calculations, to say
exactly.
at this day this is where the
yep.
the planets
so
and
what
the
you
sun
do
is
you get,
going to be.
Mm-hmm. You get the dates of the calendar, mm-hmm. you know, Western calendar that we have. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this goes back to... you know, about 1900 BC. That's how old
okay.
these things, these systems were
right.
first thought up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still being used today.
Right.
It hasn't been altered or changed. They still go by the same, numerical system.
Yeah.
And so, for example, a person might give you their date of birth, but they have to give the time, the exact time of their date of birth.
Right, so you can see exactly where the planets were at that time. Okay.
It's very much like a homeopathic manual. Like
right,
the
cornucopia or whatever
yes,
they call it.
Yes, yeah,
that thing. Yes.
Very similar.
All right. So you would, to prepare your weekly column then in the magazine, mm-hmm. you would supposedly take the ephemeris
yep,
and
get the
see.
Ruler out.
Okay.
Put it across the week
all right.
and just calculate that. And
right.
then you would then look up, you'd have an astrology book with all the signs. Mm. You just look that up and correlate them to the positions of the different planets. And there you go.
And
just
then,
type it up.
But then from there, how do you... does the book tell you what's going to happen to people, or how do you come up with what you actually write in the horoscope?
It's part of that intuitive interpretation.
Oh, it's intuition.
It's... well, every astrologer has their own take on every sign.
Right.
And it's a matter of practice. Practice
okay.
makes perfect.
Right.
Once you know the signs quite intimately,
right.
you then get a feeling...
okay.
a feeling for the signs and how they correlate to what we know about those planets, like, for instance, Mercury and what effects Mercury have as far as their symbolism in astrology.
So basically you would start off with certain ideas of personality types associated with Scorpio, Sagittarius, whatever. And then you would see, oh, the planets have certain influence traits as well. And then you can say, well, if this trait is coming into this personality, you can expect this
to happen.
Right.
You won't be able to decide about going on that holiday that you're planning, a big holiday, a departure from your normal holiday destination, perhaps in the holiday period at the end of the year. But because you're a Gemini and I see a lot of Mercury influence in your chart for this week, you're not going to be able to decide whether you want to go to Tasmania for that holiday at the end of the year or just stay at home.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you wrote these horoscopes every week.
Every week.
Using your intuition.
Yes, my professional self-taught astrology intuition.
Okay. Yeah. And how did they go? How did they go down with the readers?
Really good positive response, actually. It got to the point where I was getting a bit fed up doing the column because all this looking up and knowing all about these calculations and where the planets were. And where's my Chiron this week? Where's that showing in the stars this week?
Right, okay. You
know, and for anyone who doesn't know, Chiron is one of the large asteroids. That can affect people, you know, and that can actually bring on, if there's too much Chiron in your planets, that can bring on mental illness and things like that.
Okay, all right. And so you got tired of doing all these complicated calculations.
Right. So I kind of like, and this is sacrilegious, but I kind of sort of thought to myself, well, what I might do is just, let's just have a bit of fun and let's just change it around a bit. Maybe what I can see happening in Scorpio, let's put that in for the Sagittarians and you know, mix it up a bit, have a bit of fun.
Okay.
Boredom is a terrible thing.
Right. And then how did that go down with the readers? Were they all shocked?
Even better. I'm serious. Right. Like, I used to get some great feedback.
Right.
And the editor was so impressed. He said, look, you're one of the best people doing this that we've ever had.
Really?
You just have this specialness.
Right.
You know, gift.
Making
got that
up.
A lot. You've got a gift.
Oh, of course. Yes, you must have a gift. Okay, so readers, I mean, what kind of specific comments did you say? Did readers think that what you said was specifically applicable to their own lives?
Or pretty much, I actually, you know, people would want me to do their charts next.
Oh, really? As in,
stomach churning.
They give you their birthday at the time,
and
you prepare.
People were pretty open to send me their birth dates and give me personal information. It's amazing.
Right.
You know, handing over intimate, you know, information, asking their mothers, you know, annoying questions like, so what time was I born?
Right.
And most people who were probably born in the 60s or 70s, their mothers probably don't actually remember.
Right.
They were probably induced, a lot of them. So, I mean, it was bizarre. It was quite bizarre.
Okay. So, but that is very interesting. I mean, I think the interesting fact here is that even at a point where you decided to, how shall we put it, follow the path a little more flexibly.
Artistic license.
Use your artistic license and, let's say, mix them around,
mix
make things up a bit, be a bit creative. At that point, people were even more impressed with your predictions.
My skill.
Your
my skill. Gift.
That's right.
I actually had to give it up because, like I said, people wanted their charts done and that's just too, to me, that's just getting too crazy because I thought personally if I start doing that and I don't take it seriously enough, how am I affecting these poor people
who are
going to hold on to every single thing that I say?
Right, yeah, because
the power trip in that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean,
not good.
The people who do ask you to go to the trouble to ask you to prepare their charts are the ones who believe it most and will process quite.
They want to pay you.
Right, really.
And it was uncomfortable.
And they are the ones
personally.
Who will probably follow advice that you give them. Yeah, that's
Because what was happening at that stage, I was going through my Saturn returns.
Right.
So I was having second thoughts about the whole astrology thing anyway, but apparently that was in my chart.
Oh, because Saturn was returning?
It was, and it's a difficult time in your late 20s. It gets pretty tough for anyone heading into their late 20s. You'll probably notice it's getting harder to get out of bed, to be motivated, to find the ideal job and perhaps finding it difficult in life in general. That'll come to an end at about mid-30s, early 30s. It's just your Saturn returning from Uranus. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought it was something else, but it's just Saturn returning from
just
Uranus.
Just Saturn doing what old man time does, screw things up.
Sonia, that is most enlightening, I have to say.
I hope so.
And it seems to confirm what we were talking about earlier, that people, if they receive information that's supposedly crafted, carefully tailored for them specifically, they will find accuracy.
They will find relevance. What you're looking for. It's the same type of, what's that situation where a person can look at a piece of toast and see the Virgin Mary in it?
Right.
The burnt bits of the Virgin, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I presume. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same type of...
Well, it's the same, like reading tea leaves, or it's people will find what they want to find. People will put meaning into what is essentially random information.
If you go looking for the dark side, you'll find it. I think it was Yoda who said that. And he was a Pisces.
Oh, of course.
I did his astrology once. But that was a galaxy long time ago.
Far, far away.
Yeah, that's the
right
one.
No, but I mean, that is really interesting. And your example is a classic case of random information. Give people random information and they will superimpose their own meanings onto it. They will themselves find meaning in random information, whether it's what the psychic throws out at them, whether it's what the astrologer tells them, whether it's the formation of the tea leaves or the tarot cards or the coffee grounds.
Exactly.
Or the...
And I was asked by the editor, why do you want to give it up? And this was after only three and a half months or something. I said, because I just feel like I've been drained. The energy's just not working. I'm a vessel. I'm just a vessel.
Right, exactly.
And if you want to get out of a job, just say those sort of things and they'll let you leave. Trust me.
Right. And by then Pluto was moving into Uranus and it was just...
Chiron. It was Chiron had smashed into the atmosphere of Neptune and it was just waterlogged.
No, it was
waterlogged.
Just all going pear-shaped.
It was.
I think you're lucky to get out when you did.
Elliptical.
Sonia.
In the vernal sense.
Right.
Right.
Well, Sonia Sutta, thank you very, very much for sharing those very enlightening insights here with us on Reality Check. And do you just quickly want to give a plug for your own show coming up on Wednesday, Sci-Fi and Squeam?
Yes, this Wednesday, the 28th, it is a full moon.
Oh.
And so it is, I predict it is going to be a good show for Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Oh, naturally.
And I actually also feel intuitively that a lot of people listening to Reality Check will also be listening to Sci-Fi Squeam between the hours of 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. this Wednesday. And we do horror and science fiction. Not horoscope, but just horror.
All right. Well, Sonia, thank you once again.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes Reality Check's analysis of astrology, well, for the time being at least. And if you have any questions or comments about astrology or anything else we've covered on the show or a topic you'd like us to cover, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. And you can also visit the website, which is realitycheckonline.net. All right, let's listen to our final song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Cruising for joy? It's safe listening. Joy 94.9.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. The song you just heard there was continuing our Nordic music theme this evening, and that was Sexy Love by Norwegian singer Anneli Drecker, from the year 2000. Okay, it's movie review time here on Reality Check, and the movies up for review this evening are a South Korean murder mystery, Mother, and an historical drama set in Russia, The Last Station. So let's start with Mother. Mother is the latest offering from Korean director Bong Joon-ho, who previously directed the very successful Korean monster movie from 2006, The Host. Mother tells the story of a widow who lives alone with her only son, Do-jun, who is 27 years old and what could be described as somewhat slow. One day, a local schoolgirl is found murdered and the police arrest Do-jun as the prime suspect. The evidence seems pretty damning, but his mother cannot believe her son would do such a thing and sets out to prove his innocence. Now, this film has been getting a lot of praise from the critics. It has a rating of 79 on Metacritic and 94% on the Rotten Tomatoes website. And on the whole, I would have to say that I also did enjoy this movie, although maybe not quite as much as most of those critics. The thing about this movie is that it's quite odd and doesn't really slot neatly into any particular genre. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but sometimes I couldn't really get a feeling for the tone of what I was watching. It's basically a murder mystery as the mother investigates the schoolgirl's killing and gradually puts the pieces together to reveal the truth. At times it feels like a drama, at other times a thriller, at other times a black comedy, and there are even quite a few moments that are simply a little surreal, bordering on the David Lynch. The plot also twists and turns in a lot of unexpected directions, which is also not a bad thing, but at times it feels like this causes the film to lose a kind of satisfying overall narrative arc. But the one thing I do give it credit for is that it is very carefully scripted, and all those moments that at the time seem odd or slightly surreal are explained and become relevant later in the story. Basically, all the strands are tied up by the end of the film. Now, maybe the thing that I found least pleasing in Mother was the performance of Korean actor, model, and super hunk Won Bin, who plays the son, Do-jun. It's very hard to play an intellectually disabled person in a convincing way, and I have to say he just doesn't have the acting chops to do it. I never felt that I was watching a really mentally disabled person. He always looked like a heartthrob actor trying to play mentally challenged, which did quite spoil my enjoyment of the film. But overall, despite this, and despite being a slightly odd film with a sometimes indecipherable tone, Mother is refreshingly original and a pretty fun ride, and I would say probably worth checking out if you get the chance. Now, the second film for review this evening is a very different offering. The Last Station is a German production, spoken in English using British and American actors and set in Russia in the early 20th century. It tells the story of a young man, Valentin Bulgakov, played by James McAvoy, who is sent in 1910 from Moscow to a town about 200 kilometers away to work as the personal secretary to the 82-year-old Count Leo Tolstoy, the most celebrated Russian writer of the time and quite possibly the most celebrated writer in the world of that period. Valentin lives in a commune of Tolstoyans, close to Tolstoy's country estate, Yasnaya Polyana, and spends his days with Tolstoy and his nights in the commune. The film follows the turbulent last months of Tolstoy's life, as conflicts arise between his disciples, the Tolstoyans, and Tolstoy's more pragmatic wife, the Countess Sofia, played by Helen Mirren. The conflict largely centers on Tolstoy's will. The Tolstoyans have convinced Tolstoy to leave the copyright for all his works to the Russian people in general. But the Countess is worried that this will cause her significant financial difficulties, so she wants to inherit the copyright as well as the rest of Tolstoy's estate. Valentin finds himself torn between the two sides as they each try to outmaneuver the other. Now, on the positive side, I have to say that I enjoyed this film simply because it told a story I knew nothing about. I didn't realize what a huge celebrity Tolstoy was in his day, and how the media swarmed around him during those last weeks of his life, especially in his dying days at the Astapovo railway station. His death became a huge media event. I also didn't know that Tolstoy had written on politics and religion and had started a kind of non-violent Christian anarchist movement which raised the suspicions of the Tsarist Russian state of the time. Tolstoy's ideas were also influential on other great 20th century leaders of non-violent resistance movements, such as Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. So I was quite fascinated by this depiction of real-life historical events that I knew very little about. And I did find the end of the film, when Tolstoy dies, quite moving. But overall, I think The Last Station suffers from something that actually bothered me a bit about Mother as well. It doesn't really find the right tone. It depicts scenes that could be interpreted as dramatic or moving, but adds some light-hearted or slightly silly music over the top, so that the audience understands that it's meant to be slightly comic or tongue-in-cheek. And this happens all the way through the movie, so that the whole thing ends up feeling a little bit too light and sweet, and this does spoil the film somewhat, in my opinion. The subject matter is very serious and very interesting, but it ends up feeling like a Hollywood light touch was added to the whole affair, to take away any gravitas it could have had. Which is quite a shame, really, because the issues raised, the conflict between Tolstoy's political views and his personal life, could have made for a much more interesting film, if dealt with a little more seriously. But that said, I did enjoy watching The Last Station, not only for the interesting story, but also for the presence of two actors I really enjoy watching on screen, James McAvoy and Helen Mirren. Helen Mirren has received a lot of acclaim for her role in this film and was even nominated for Best Actress at this year's Oscars for her portrayal as the Countess. But of course, she lost out to Sandra Bullock. Anyway, these two great actors have quite a lot of screen time between them and they are quite a pleasure to watch. So on balance, I would say The Last Station, although a little bit saccharine in tone, is a film worth checking out for the great performances and the fascinating story. And that brings us to the end of the 34th episode of Reality Check on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com and visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for episode 35. Coming up next, David presents An Awkward Pause. Have a great week, everyone, and see you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.